give to you while we find the next few question askers. John Sterlinski is here. Scott Ingram is over here. And then who will... I don't know who's pretending to be Stephen Brent, but I don't think that he is here.
Ah, Stephen, you made it.
There's a lot of questions.
That's you guys a high standard to hold yourself to if you're going to ask a question like Stephen Brent.
Okay, well, we'll start with this one. If you have to speculate, which I don't think front office people do, you guys, but if you have to speculate, do you think Jose Bautista will play in the majors this year?
Well, that's a good question. I guess I think he should. You know, I don't know. There's so many variables that are into that, including just him. You know, what meets his standards and criteria, which I don't know. You know, what's important to him. I still think if I was at another club and looked at his body of work and looked at what he's two seasons removed from, I would say, you know, yeah. I mean, give the guy if you needed a right-handed bat, if you needed an outfielder, I'd say he's a guy you should take a look at. And I think you get an opportunity. The question is whether that opportunity will fit the criteria that he has, which is it could be a variety of things. I don't know what it could be: geography, it could be money, any playing time, any of those things. So I think it's dependent a little bit on him and a little bit on situation and circumstance.
Let's go down here.
Mark, question about fan experience. What are the renovations going to be? How much are they going to cost?
And a lot.
And who's going to pay for it?
Not me.
No, us?
A lot, and not me.
Are the fans going to end up paying for it?
No, the fans can't pay for that. There's no business model that would allow fans to fund a stadium project. Okay, so let me do the best I can to kind of summarize and answer. It's a good question. There's a lot within that, and I don't want to just talk for 15 minutes. I may shortchange it. If I do, we can follow up later with someone else. One, what is it going to be? I can summarize what it needs to be, which is the ballpark or the stadium. The ballpark's not what it needs to be. It's not what it is. It is largely still the product of the 1980s lens. Which means fine, especially when it's full, it still feels great, right? Fine for watching the game. Incredibly good bones for a building built in the late 80s, really incredibly. There are two stadiums being torn down right now that were built, well after this one. So a lot of things that still give it, and probably among the greatest locations in all of Major League Baseball, So that's also something to celebrate. Yet the building and the stadium offers the identical fan experience, meaning other than the vantage point, the view you're seeing, whether you're in the 500s or the 200s or the 100s, it's the same experience. There's no differentiation. So one, and again, I would be a purist, right? So I would go to the game, want to watch between base to base and have a scorecard, and I would want to score the game. However, there are a lot of people who want to bring young kids. I was that guy at one point, that are 3, 4, 5 years old, that want to have a place for their kids to play and be entertained in the way kids today are entertained and still see the game. So a state-of-the-art family area kids club that allows for entertainment for kids of all different ages and focuses on those different ages. There are people who want to be at the game but don't necessarily want to watch every minute of the game. They want to be in a community, in a gathering space where they can be in the coolest bar in Toronto that happens to be inside Rogers Center. We don't really have a space for that. WestJet is a good viewing kind of platform, but it's not a cool bar, so we need that. There are people who want to come over from corporate and entertain clients and talk about business deals, and we have the third lowest amount of premium seating in all of Major League Baseball. So all these different experiences I'm giving you, we don't really have a targeted, segmented, delineated set of experiences. We don't offer a lot of variety. We don't have a lot of openness of our concourse, openness to the field, openness to the city. It's hard. It's dungeonous in different places and dark. All these things would be themes. Well, it was like that even in Progressive Field before we renovated there too. We have to open things up. We have to connect. We have to create bigger gathering spaces, we have to create a different set of experiences. Those are some broader themes. And I think we also have to honor the tradition and honor the history. You know, I mean, it's 40 years now, right? So 30 years ago, there was no history. There wasn't much history to honor. And now we've got a history. And so I think we need to include more Jay's history within the building, you know, more branding within the building, not sterile environment, but one that you walk into and you know where you are and you know what you're celebrating by being there, not just that game, but the past as well. So if I had to give you themes, not necessarily what exactly the execution would be, and those themes aren't based on my opinion, those are based on research of the best executions throughout all of sport, and they're based on focus groups of our fans that we've talked to, and then still trying to think ahead of what's going to be relevant to the next generation of fans. So that would be, you know, what the execution would be. What was the rest of it? Who's going to pay for it? Cost. The cost is, like I said, a lot. You know, I think I said in an interview, it's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars. That's why it's taken a while to figure out, you know, how we get there. It's not tens of millions. It's not a small amount. And, you know, unlike the 29 teams we compete against, we're not going to get public funding for it. We're going to have to privately fund it. So the owner is going to pay. Rogers is going to pay. There's been absolute alignment and recognition and support. You know, it's only a question of how do we best do it? Is it fit into other things they want to do around the area, not just the stadium? And what's the right timing to do it? So I think it'll be sooner rather than later. I think it'll be hopefully before the end of the season that we'll have an announcement of what we're doing. But I trust and believe it's going to happen soon, you know, that we're going to start doing it soon.
Mark, you mentioned progressive fields. Is there any other fields or ballparks out there that you think have had renovations that have been well done or any that you would like?
Well, I mean, there's stadiums, I think, that are great, but ours is so unique because of the roof. I mean, the only ones that are, you know, that seal off are really domes that open. You know, Houston is a dome that opens. I'm not sure that they've done a few renovations. Some ideas would be great there, but Target Field, I think, is one of the best stadiums. But again, all you can do is look at bits and pieces of, you know, what those stadiums did and say what applies. You have to be market, you have to center on what this market wants, on what this market is, on who our fan base is, on where the ballpark is, and on what architecturally already exists. So it has to be somewhat unique. That's why I say it's easier for me to talk about themes than it is about execution. The execution will be up to designers, and you know, there'll be a bunch of different ideas. And when we get to that point, we'll be meeting with fans and showing them different visuals and asking fans, what do you think? You know, what do you think would be best?
I'm just going to throw out a couple more names here, and then we're going to move to Scott, who I believe is over here somewhere. Right. Michael Fox. James Burrows. Please put your hands up, guys. And Jake Spodek? Thank you. So, Scott, over here.
Okay, hi.
Hey, Scott.
This may seem like a minor point, but I think it's talking to the fan experience thing, which has been a major talking point of yours.
I'm interested to hear it, yeah.
Yeah, so bike racks. So the...
Whoa!
The fan base over the last several years has seems to be a lot more urban, younger, and a lot of people in the downtown core ride their bikes to the game.
Yeah.
I know I do all the time, and usually when I'm coming with friends, we ride together, or I meet them down there, whatever. So in the northwest corner, which is where I come from, about three seasons ago, a bike rack was removed on the west wall. And I went into like guest services, and I filled out a form, gave my address, my email, phone number, said, hey, what's up with the bike rack? I never heard back. And then last year, so I do the same thing every year.
Yeah.
And I heard, at one time, I got back to me just because I checked with my ticket rep, and he said he heard that it was just like under construction. But it went away three seasons ago, never came back. This year, I noticed you guys put some new bike racks on the stadium, but there's less. So in the southeast corner by gate 6, I parked my bike there Sunday, and there was 32, we'll call it poles, like, you know, the curved thing where you lock your, there were 32 last year. There's now 14 nicer and newer looking ones, but 14. So I'd rather have a, like be kind of crammed and be able to stick my bike somewhere and lock it than have nice pretty ones way more spaced out than you need to be that I can't actually lock up to. And on a busy day on the weekend, you'll find in the northwest corner, like people are locking up to the hand railings going down the stairs and stuff just because it's full. So
hey,
this is low-hanging fruit.
Guys.
Low-hanging fruit. Just wondering what...
Well, I mean, I love the fact that we've got a huge base of our fan base biking. I think that's awesome. It's, again, one of the great things of Toronto. I can honestly tell you, man, that hasn't crossed my desk. Like, I've never seen that. I've never, you know, it's something that, you know, Seb's here. Maybe we can look into it and we can get your name and get back to you and try to address it and see what we can do, you know. I'm disappointed that you didn't hear back. Have you done it this year? Yeah, because we did hire a new woman in charge of fan experience. We had no one overseeing. So this is a good answer to your question. When I got here, we had no fan experience department. We had an executive assistant of one person who literally every single question and every single complaint, any feedback at all went to one human being. And so that's the answer. There's no way on earth. It wasn't systematic. It wasn't a department. And there wasn't the headcount allotted towards answering our fans and interacting with our fans. Christine Robertson was hired. She's phenomenal. She is so compassionate. She cares more than you could ever imagine. So again, I'm giving you her name, right? Christine.Robertson@bluejays.com. Write her an email. I would almost guarantee you, if not, you come back, you tell me that you'll hear back from her. I think we've got the people in place now. We're building a department there to handle that type of feedback.
The next question is from Michael Fox, I believe.
I feel like he's
right here.
Hi, I'm wondering if you can drill down a little bit more into the stadium renovations and talk a little bit about what architecture firms you've been working with, what level of design development you're at, why it's taking so long to announce something publicly, and kind of related to that is what is the relationship like with Rogers and in terms of the financing?
No. No, I'm just joking. I'm not going to give you a very deep answer to that. Those are good questions. Gensler was the firm that we design firm that we work with. But we work with numerous other firms as well. But again, I think a lot of it is about just research. It's about going and visiting the best stadiums, ballparks, arenas around the world, looking at and then trying to think about trends in entertainment, media, the way people digest content and view sport. Thinking about future-proofing and flexibility moving forward. Those are the things. The reason it's taking so long is simple. It's hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not a small project. And so, during the time that I've been here, there have been three CEOs at Rogers. Joe Natale is unbelievably supportive, but in that transition, it takes time for someone to come in. He's been here 1 year. To think about, how will they fund it, how will they support it, and where does it fit in their priorities. The most important thing I can tell you is it is a priority for them, uniformly, believed in, and I'm confident it's going to happen, but it's not as quick as I would want, I'm the operator of the team, it's not as quick as you would want, but it's definitively going to happen, so that's a good thing.
Okay, up next we have James Burrows, right over there.
Hi.
Hi, James.
With all the outfield depth in Buffalo, how much room do you feel that, and I hate to pick on Randall Grichuk this week, but how much room do you feel that that he has to perform before you call up all the great depth you have down there? And also, Jason Leblebijian played a lot of innings in spring training.
I think he led the Grapefruit League in at-bats.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And he did really well in the first half in Buffalo last year, but I'm just curious how the organization views him.
Yeah. Well, with Leb, the organization views him as a guy we're pulling for, because he's one of the better people, one of the hardest workers that you'll ever imagine. So I think he's probably already exceeded the expectations of a lot of people when he first entered pro ball. But I think we look at him as a guy because he doesn't have a strong positional fit. He's not a guy that profiles with big power or big speed or huge athleticism. He's going to be a guy that has to perform his way to the big leagues, you know, or situationally, you know, we have a need. But he's a guy that, I want to see him get there. You know, I really do. Like, so there are guys you pull for, you know, and the best thing ever is when your best players are your best people and you're pulling for those guys too. But Lev is a guy that you know, he's going to get there, man. It'll be something worth celebrating. When it comes to decisions and Gritch has had a really tough night last night. But, you know, he's human and he's pressing, you know, he's done some things already at the major league level that are pretty impressive. You know, this is a strange game, man. Five days from now, you could be saying, hey, man, what's going on with someone else? You know, that's just the nature of it. Ross and I were talking this morning, and we were saying, you know, I was saying, man, like, their center fielder Engel, he looked terrible, and our scouting reports are really good on him. The White Sox center fielder, I don't know if you saw him, he dropped a couple balls, his at-bats were poor. I said, he looked terrible, and Ross said, hey, the metrics on him are really good. He's a really good defender, and our reports on him are good, too, and he was actually pretty good last year. I was like, you know, and he said, they're probably saying the same thing about Gritch, you know, so Jim Leland, I was in Jim Leland's office, you know, secondhand smoking of two packs of cigarettes one time. because if you're in Jim Leland's office, the door's closed and he's puffing away. And he told me, he said, man, he goes, I don't know about these advanced reports. I read these things. I just know they're as good as they are when we play them. You know, and I think that just says that we all get affected emotionally sometimes by 2, 3, 4 games, but we're making decisions, you know, and if we're making decisions, the same reason we chose to trade for, believe in, give a player an opportunity, we have to counter that emotion with some of the objective information that we've got, which is based on hundreds of at-bats or thousands of at-bats instead of 20 at-bats. And so it's a balance, right? Like, you know, we'll hope that if we believe in a guy, we'll be rewarded for the reasons we made the decision. And that's what we always get back to. If we had good reasons for making a decision, the belief is if you're patient, that decision will be rewarded over time.
So we're going to go to James, whose name, my last name, I cannot pronounce. But before that, Connor Lynch will be up next. Where is Connor? Connor is right here. So James, where are you? Right here. Jake. Yeah. Sorry. My bad. Can't read.
What's up, Jake?
Hi. So I'd like to ask about something that's been in the news a little bit, baseball-wise, with some legislation in the States. That's minor league wages.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sides to that conversation that I'm not going to get into.
Yeah.
But just from a baseball perspective, there are a lot of people who think that a major league team could benefit from having a farm system that, you know, is better financially compensated and with the focus at the major league level on high performance and things like that. If an organization were to ensure that their minor leaguers weren't eating fast food and peanut butter sandwiches all the time and weren't sleeping six guys to a three-bedroom apartment and things like that, that could, in the long term, benefit the major league product in some ways. And so I was wondering, in what ways do you think an organization could benefit from investing in their farm system in that way?
You're asking the wrong guy. You know, we're the only organization in baseball. We're the CEO, the GM, the VP of baseball operations, and the farm director. All were farm directors. You know, I'm not sure you're going to find. You got me, Ross Atkins, Ben Sherrington, and Gil Kim. And all four of us are player development guys that, if you've read anything I've said over the last 3 years, you know, I believe the lifeblood to a system is investing in player development, which not just means investing in players, it means investing in all the resources that provide the players the best opportunity to be successful, which means if you went down and looked at what our players are eating, we are spending probably more money than anybody or as much money as anybody in baseball to feed them the best food possible. We are supplementing spreads. We are, you know, getting the best nutrition we can, and we're educating them also about those things, that we are, you know, helping them figure out better sleep strategies. We are giving them the best coaches, the best facilities. We're about to, you know, help invest in an $81 million renovation of our spring training facility to provide a cutting edge, state-of-the-art training and rehabilitation facility. So I could go on and talk about player development for an hour because it's the core of what I believe and I'm passionate about it. That doesn't necessarily tie to the minor league wages. Minor league players have never been treated fairly. I think we live in a world where rock stars make millions of dollars for performances and teachers make tens of thousands of dollars. Is that fair? That's not fair. So, I mean, there's inequities all over the place. I guess that doesn't address the inequity of what minor league players get paid. That's the nature of the system, which I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about. What I have spent time thinking about is that we're going to not cut any quarters on what we invest in our player development system. We're not going to cut any corners on the resources we provide our minor league players, from equipment to people to every support system humanly possible, mentally, physically, and fundamentally. So I give you that word. I tell you, I believe that at the deepest part of my soul and core, and I've seen the impact of that. And we've got an organization of people that believe that, not just me.
And one thing I also wanted to ask is...
No two-part questions, man. If you couldn't ask it the first time, you can't ask it
well,
now.
Well, you did interrupt me before.
That's because no one wanted to hear about the minor league wage issue in the United States legislature.
I think a lot of people do want to hear about it.
Not here.
I just wanted to know if you think more teams would ever make a serious investment in those kinds of things without pressure from, you know, a minor league union or something that doesn't exist right now.
I hope not, because I'm a competitor at heart, you know, and I feel like that gives us a competitive advantage, you know. But yes, I mean, listen, I got a text message this morning from Omar Minaya, who's with the Mets, and he sent me a video on what they're doing to educate the players that they've got in the Dominican Republic and help provide them life skills, because the reality is that the majority of those kids are 16, 17 years old, don't have an education, and are never making it out of the Dominican Academy. So they're trying to impact their players. That's the Mets, you know. So, yeah, I think every system to a different degree is thinking about not just how to develop better major league players, but develop better people. I truly believe this. Like, if we do a better job at developing people, we're also doing a better job at developing players. You can't separate the two. You know, the team's made up of the best teammates, the toughest people, the highest character, the best determination and perseverance. They're going to be better equipped to handle life, and they're going to be better baseball players too. So I do believe, and again, I've got the benefit of 25 years of watching players that have come through a system that didn't make it to the big leagues and come back and say, you know, the things you guys taught me have made me a better real estate agent. They've made me a better teacher. They've made me a better coach. They've made me a better, you know, father. And so I believe those things deeply, and I think other people think about those things. Whether teams spend the time and energy to do those, I'm not sure. But I'm spending time and energy on the Toronto Blue Jays, not on other teams right now.
I think Russell Westbrook might have a problem with you slagging the peanut butter sandwich, to be honest, because he really likes
peanut
those.
Butter sandwiches are great. That's nutritious. Yeah. You know what killed me was when the Skittles were the what was the running back? Marshawn Lynch. My son's telling me, okay, Dad, you keep talking about nutrition while Marshawn Lynch is eating Skittles on the sideline. I'm like, damn. Not helping me, Marshawn.
Up next, we have Connor Lynch. Yeah. Connor.
Right here.
Right here in the middle.
Hey, Mark. So hey, the draft is a little ways off, yeah. But my question is essentially, how do you guys approach that just in general terms? Obviously, the team has needs. The farm system has needs. And then there's also the consideration of who the players are coming up. How do you guys approach that in general terms and specifically with this coming draft?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, listen, I'm thinking of a couple different things. You know, one, the easy answer is our approach is to take the best player. And I guess I could tell you, I was talking to somebody the other day, I can't remember the context, but I've looked back as I've, you know, spent time reflecting at like 3 and 5 year plans for you know, a lot of years and always looked at the names and always kind of laughed at how rarely it turns out to be the guys you think are going to be, you know, guys that end up being players. So if you think you can guess at a 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old exactly who are going to be the players when you're planning your team 3 to 5 years from now, unless you're picking 1-1 or 1-2, which I hope we never do, you know, you're really rolling the dice. So I would say we're just taking the best talent possible, and we'll always plan our team around kind of where that talent happens to unfold, and always look to just score more and prevent more runs. And there'll be different ways to do that. So that's the best answer I can give you, that, you know, especially where we're picking, you know, we're conventional draft this year, so conventional first round, conventional second round pick, that'll still be two in the top 50, I think, or just outside of 50. We think we're going to get great players. It is a deep draft this year. It's been a little bit uncertain over the past couple weeks. I talked to Steve Sanders, which is back in town for the weekend. Some of the high school players who were high profile coming in have been either hurt or disappointing. All those things are good in my mind. I told Steve, don't worry, but that's a great thing for us. That means somebody who we thought was going to be a top five guy coming in, you know, might slide to us, you know, at 12. So, that we'll approach the draft, that we'll be as prepared as we can possibly be. We'll have the best process you can have, the best system in place for slotting players and determining a pref list, and then we'll execute that list on the day of the draft.
So there's no emphasis on, say, high school versus college, or, you know, pitchers versus position players or anything along those
lines? I would say that we use a model-based approach to make decisions. So historically, you know, where high school versus college or pitcher versus position player and age and geography and competition and all those things factor in, those things would all be variables that enter into a model and would all impact where a player ends up getting slotted, along with scouting reports and subjective opinions.
Thank you.
So if we could get a microphone to somebody named Terry M., I have a quick question for Terry M. Who is Terry M.? Terry M. is over here. Terry M. wants to know when we will see real craft beer at the Dome. And I don't know what Terry M. means by real craft beer. So
that's a good question.
Hey, Mark, sorry to interrupt you. First time, long time. It's Tori M., thanks.
Oh, Tori, sorry.
It's okay. It's my writing. It's the worst. By real craft beer, I mean locally brewed.
Yeah, no, I get
independent.
It.
Independent.
I know.
Maybe, let's say, something like this beautiful baseball themed brewery here.
Yeah.
Left Field Brewery, perhaps?
Left Field Brewery.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I guess if history shows itself to be the best predictor of the future, you can go to Progressive Field and go out and look at Corner Bar and find real local craft beer there that we turned down a major sponsorship from a major brewery in order to have craft beer. What I'd say is that the concourses now, the way they're set up, how small they are, how narrow they are, it hasn't, you know, we haven't found the best way yet to inject enough local concessions and local both dining and, you know, beer into what we're doing. We've waited and said, let's wait until we can re-envision the entire experience, and then let's rethink about how we, you know, incorporate all of the greatest food, beer, and other, you know, treats from Toronto into the fan experience. So we want to do that badly, and I think if we for some reason feel like that's not going to happen sooner rather than later, then we need to think about doing it creatively.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Just keep in mind, 355 cans, they don't take up much room on the concourse. Appreciate it, Mark.
So you guys don't follow instructions. Great. So I have a bunch of questions here that I'm just going to ask you. This one is a fun one, I think. Also asking for restaurant recommendations in Cleveland, if you could pass those along to Marty. He's looking for it. But it's,
I'll be there, too. We'll,
It is June 2016, and you signed Justin Smoke to a two-year extension with a team option. Tell us, what did you know that no one else did?
Well, I can tell you this: you're never that smart, and you're never that dumb. You know, I mean, Justin Smoke. So the honest to truth is, believed in the guy, you know, believed in his work ethic, believed in how much he cared, felt like, you know, we had an offseason where we were going to have a lot of question marks on corner bats, you know, Edwin, Jose, that there was a lot of things we were going to have to deal with, and there was not going to be enough people or time to deal with all the issues that we had to deal with that offseason. So it was like, let's explore whether there is an extension for Smokey that wouldn't prohibit us from doing any other business, but would still give us the ability to retain a player we believe in, a corner bat, and obviously the head upside to be even better than he was. And I think part of his upside came with security. He had never had a multi-year contract, and that can impact some players differently than others. You know, I think with Jim Thome, when he took off, when we gave him a multi-year contract in Cleveland, ended up building a Hall of Fame career. But you know, that multi-year contract, when JT struggled earlier in his career and went up and down from the big leagues, he still had a multi-year deal in place. And I think it always gave him the confidence to know they are still committed to me and they believe in me. And it's a, you know, the game is, it's a beast. I mean, the level of pressure that players deal with, you know, I wish I could articulate that and have you feel that a little more, but you know, the pressures they deal with, the amount they want to succeed, regardless of how it may look sometimes, you know, it can chew guys up and spit them out. So that little bit of security sometimes can help push a guy over the top. And I think in Justin's case, the work ethic was always there. The talent was always there. If you look at the pedigree, the teammate was always there. And it just took some adjustment, as well as I think that confidence of knowing he was going to be in place to kind of get him over the top and be the player he could always be.
We got time for a couple more, and then we're going to let Mark go enjoy what's left of his day off. Alex asks, what position or job do you find is the hardest to fill within the Blue Jays organization?
Is that
on field? Where is Alex? Alex is over here.
In the office.
Front office.
That's a great question, man. Holy cow. I have to say president and CEO. No. Oh, man. I don't, it's interesting. I look at it so much as a collaborative effort, you know. I don't focus on any one job. Scouting director is a really tough one. I say that because you're managing a group of people who are spread out all of North America. You know, they're not in one place. You're seldom in front of them all in one time, yet you still got to have them acting cohesively with one philosophy and one strategy, and you've got to help people who might not hear contact for a week or 2 weeks still feel like the work they're doing every night is important. So that scout driving in the middle of nowhere in a beat-up Pontiac, you know, to go see a player on a rainy, cold, 9-degree night has to feel like what I'm doing tonight's important. This player might actually pitch for the Jays in a playoff game 5 years from now, you know? And it's easy for that guy not to feel that way, for him to feel like, I got to get this report in, and I just got to get the report in, that's it, and not think that the report is that important. For us to be a great organization, for us to beat the Yankees and Red Sox, that scout has to be focused on being better than the 29 other scouts that scout the same area he scouts or she scouts. So that's a really hard job for a scouting director, to run a draft, to create a system for picking the best players, to manage people who aren't physically in one place, and have a combination of administrative management and evaluative skills. That's a tough job to fill.
Okay, well, there's lots of questions left in there, so you guys are going to have to come back next time Mark is around, but we are going to let him go for now. Do you have anything you would like to say before
you head
out? No,
I enjoy the opportunity. I'm sorry to have shortchanged your question and interrupted you. Seriously, I apologize for that. But I enjoy the opportunity. I think the reason why I, you know, agree to come back here on an off night is because the questions here are really smart. You know, really informed questions that show that you're thinking about the game. That doesn't mean you're not emotional. Doesn't mean you don't want to win, which I appreciate also. That's passion. That's what drives us. You know, it's everything we do in the end is for the fans. It doesn't, you know, it's a hard job because you've got to have one eye on today and one eye on the future, and the future decisions aren't always the ones that please anyone at the moment, but we're trying to just do the best job we can to give you a championship team year in and year out. And there's going to be ups and downs along the way with that, but we're spending 80 hours a week. There's a bunch of people that are thinking about it night and day and care deeply and want you guys to be able to celebrate the after the last outs played in a championship season and watching players pigpile on the mound. And we're not going to rest until that happens. So appreciate the support.